Entree Architect Podcast, Build Your Brand Podcast, ArcaSpeak Podcast, Spaces Podcast, and now Practice Disrupted and Troxel. All your favorite podcasts in one place. GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. Go listen and subscribe right now. Hello, my name is Mark Arlepage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 329, Developing a New Model for Residential Development with Trayvon Mathis. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, Gusto, easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. And RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and much more at RCAT.com. Trayvon Mathis, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Trayvon Mathis is an architectural designer and contractor based in Toledo, Ohio. Let me read his bio from his LinkedIn because I think that shares a little bit about who he is and give you some idea of where he's coming from. And I love it. My background is in architectural design, and that is where my heart is. But I'm more than just a designer. I hope that my work can become integral part of everyday life for people who are affected by it. I hope to empower, enrich, and celebrate the things that make life worth living. That's my calling as a designer and the intent of my career. I love that. I love it. So that gives you sort of an idea of where Trayvon's coming from. About a month ago, when the protests about racism and law enforcement first started, ignited by the death of George Floyd, Trayvon, a member of our Entree Architect community, our private Facebook group, he posted a post in our Facebook group. He shared his experience with what was happening at the moment in Toledo, which was happening all over everywhere. It was happening in every city, large and small, and throughout the nation. We as a nation are in crisis. His city is in crisis. Our profession is in crisis. And Trayvon reached out to our community of architects, his community of architects, for support. And so I invited Trayvon immediately to join me that day to record a video because I wanted him to share in detail what was happening and what we as a community can do to help. I encourage you to go watch that video. It's over on our Entree Architect YouTube channel. Even if you've already watched it, watch it again. We need to remember what's happening at that moment. Because it's still happening, and it will continue to happen until we all come together and work together to solve the problems that we have as a nation. And we have a very long way to go, but that video will be a reminder. It'll be a reminder to all of us in the community that we need to stay focused and work consistently and continuously to fix the problems of racism in America, as well as racism in our profession of architecture. But today I invited Trayvon to join me here at Entree Architect Podcast, because I want to know more about him. I want to learn more about him as a designer, as an architectural designer. The video over on YouTube is intended to highlight and record that moment to help us better understand that we can work together and make things better. But today I want to focus on you, Trayvon. I want to, you've been working hard to make the world a better place. And I often say here on the podcast, focus on what you can control, right? And you've been doing that. So I want to share your story today on what's happening with you, on what you've been doing to make an impact on the world, because I think you might be able to inspire us, you, the listener, to take action, take action in your world to make the world a little bit better place. So Trayvon, I want to start with your origin story, like we do in every episode here. So I'd love for you to go back to what inspired you to pursue architecture. And share that story from that moment to where you find yourself today.
Well, so a little bit of background. My dad was in the military. He retired from the military, made it very high up.
What branch?
Just the Army.
Army, yep.
Anything like that. Yeah. And I enjoyed a mixture of life. So I got to travel. I got to mix cultures. I got to see things from multiple different perspectives growing up. And I started at a very young age. So one thing that my parents kept reinforcing was, what do you want to be when you get older? That's the question. You know, everybody asks the kids that, what do you want to be when you get older?
Right.
And, you know, as kids, we throw out whatever. You know, we say firefighters. Me personally, I want to be an astronaut, right?
Yep. Me too.
And I found out that I was afraid of heights. So I was like, maybe not an astronaut, maybe a firefighter. These are years apart, right? So I'm not a firefighter, but a jet pilot, because we lived on an Air Force base. And I was like, yeah, because that's not as high. So, you know, maybe that won't be so bad. And I was like, nah, high is high. So I'm going to switch. And I said, all right, chemical engineer, right? Because all I knew is I wanted to be in big corporate America. That was the glamorous vision for me. Even at 10 and 11, I wanted to be in big corporate America. I wanted to be an executive. And so I was thinking, you know, well, I could be a chemical engineer and I could be a mad scientist in this corporate world. So mad scientist was a big deal. And right around the top during high school, about my sophomore year, I was boxing at the time, and my boxing coach was really influential in my professional life, because he pushed professional development over sports. So in order to box, you had to achieve high grades and think about your career and stuff like that. Well, he got me lined up with my local water treatment plant. And so I shadowed them for a day, and I fell asleep standing up. It was no slight to the chemical engineers out there, but it was not the mad scientist I envisioned. And I was like, definitely not. So one day we were in a boxing camp. We were in St. Pierre, Indiana. It's a small city with nothing but vacation homes. These rich bigwig types, they have their vacation homes with the A-frame, glass front, everything. Yep. On the front. I'm like, hey, coach, how can I get that? He's like, well, you can build it. Well, I took that literally, and that's what started it. So after that, I joined my high school's architecture program. I won all of the regional architecture design competitions. SSOE Group recruited me as a junior in high school. Some of you may know about SSOE Group. Some of you may not. It's one of the larger firms in the country. It's international. And I ultimately went to work for them in my freshman year of college. And from there, it's just been a fight to get to that architect level. But in doing that, I kind of, because of my background, first off, I love the design. I found out that I was a designer, that I was a problem solver. And that's what I see us as, problem solvers.
Yeah.
A lot of people see us as these artsy big wig types, but I know what we really are. We solve the problem. We are the people that you come to with the abstract issues. I worked for engineering firms, structural engineering firms and mechanical engineering firms. I've worked for them all, and I can see the difference. I would not switch to engineering, even though the money's so good, because the problems that they solve are very static in nature, whereas ours are very much dealing with directly the human condition. Yep. We are the problem solvers of our society. And so I just dug in, and I kept digging. High school was a roller coaster, but it was all wins. College was a very up and down experience, because I had to work through it. So I was working full time in school full time. So I didn't get the live-in studio and college experience that a lot of people got. But there was an entire other faction of people doing the same thing as me. So we bonded together, and we were kind of like rebels, you know. We had to do all this stuff. So we fought hard. And college was tough, but we made it through. And by the end of college, I had actually had two kids on the way. And they made me understand that it's now or never to start my own operation. SSOE was the best company I've ever worked for. They were great. They were inclusive. They had projects all over the world. I did big projects. I did small ones. It was great. They didn't tackle the local issues, though. It was more so for corporations, Honda, Toyota, And I wanted to get right down to the mom and pop, to the community level, development level stuff. So I broke off and I started Savan. And that has been a very uphill battle for the last 3 years. I've been doing that. But we built it and it's coming along. My time in Italy, I lived in Italy, I lived in Oklahoma, I lived in Toledo, I traveled all over Europe. I got to see how all of these different societies exist and come together. And now I'm here and I'm looking at our American society and I can see the influence of how our country developed. You know, I can see the industrialization at its roots from the gridded blocks of cities versus the organic kind of flow of the streets. I can see the community orientation of the European states and cities versus ours, whereas, you know, it's more individualized and isolated. And I can see the cultural differences on both sides, you know, from the African American community to the Polish community. We have an entire Polish community on the east side of Toledo. I can see it all. I can see how all of those cultures have intermixed, and I can see the influences. And I'm excited to dig in and make a difference in that and change the way we live for the better. So. Yeah, that's my origin story, man, and it's been a wild, fun ride, and it's never stopping.
So 3 years with Savayan, yes. It's Savayan, right? Yes. So if people want to go look, the website is savayan.com, which is great to get a little short little .com name like that. That's hard to do. Tell me a little bit about Savayan, what it is, and what you want it to be.
So Savayan, I guess should I start with the name?
Yeah. I would love to know where the name came from.
So, when I graduated college, I was thinking about my manifesto. Okay. The thing that was going to make me the famous architect.
Yep.
One day. And, for me, division is a big theme in my life. Division, even though I've experienced so many different cultures, the reason I got on here is because the division in the country, the division in the community, it's division is everywhere, and it just doesn't make sense because when we design, we're also divided. There's so many different design themes happening. And so I kind of wrote this 5-minute video in which I talked about how we have, I think the DNA difference is like 99. There's like 0.1 difference.
Yeah.
Between my DNA and your DNA.
Yep.
Okay? Across the board. And while that has big impacts in phenotype things like, you know, our skin color, maybe our eye color, ultimately we are the same organism still. The idea that we have to have a similar environment, there's a common environment that we all thrive in because we're still human beings. We're still the same species of animal. And with that in mind, if we find that common ground, we should be able to come up with a theme of design that is pleasurable to the majority of the population. Okay, so I've taken a scientific approach to design and community. So I dug very deep into anthropology.
Yeah.
I dug very deep into that. And with all of the information that we had, I guess the ideas that we all came from the African savannah, and then we branched off. What took millions of years for us to, I believe in evolution, by the way, many people would disagree. But there's parallels, even if you want to speak biblically or through your religion. But the idea is that we came from a central location and we branched out. It took us millions of years to evolve or arrive at where we say we started from, where we consider ourselves Homo sapiens. So, and then our recorded history is like a little skip of that. It's literally like...
Yeah, it's a grain of sand.
Yeah. You know, so... We have not had time to evolve any enough differences to actually stray from this idea that if we can find that common environment being beneficial for most people. And that's what Savannah means. It means from the Savannah. And it's a play on words. It means that we are all similar. We are all of the same kind of human being. There's not very much that separates us. We're all Savannahs. So that's where Savannah came from.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's good. It's
a long wordy thing. I'm trying to like get it, crunch it down, but there's a lot to pack into that. And that's the thing. And as far as our design philosophy goes, we started off as a design group, and we were not architects. So we would contract underneath architects, and I have some phenomenal architects in the area who mentored me and who stood behind me, who let me be underneath them and do this work. Obviously, according to legal guidelines.
Right.
And so we start off with design, and then we realize, like, man, we can design all we want, but we still have to get it built, right? And so then we were like, okay, well, maybe we need to take that next step over. So Savannah started 3 years ago. We had a good run, and we got a lot of clients and stuff, but we couldn't generate the capital that we wanted to make the change that we wanted to make, which I'll get into next. So we jumped over to the contractor side as well.
So you started in design. So you would work with people to help design projects, and then work with architects to make those things happen. And then you would hand those off to a contractor, and they would build it.
Yep.
That's originally what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And as architects, you all know the fees behind the construction side is astronomical. You know, while we're fighting for 10% of the construction fee, you know, they're cleaning up the rest.
Yeah.
And I mean, for good reason, they have a lot of liability going on. There's a lot of stress behind it. But there's a lot left on the table on the other side. So if I could bring those two together, then we can really with a lot less money, we can bring this vision that I have together. And so let's talk about the vision. Savannah is going to keep evolving. We went from designer to contractor, and we're going to evolve into a family incubator. What does that mean? We have a program we've been trying to push with the city. The city has responded, but we didn't have the resources to move forward fully. But the Savannah Housing Project is our ultimate goal. Okay. And you're going to see you're going to see hospitals doing this model. Just know, I beat them to it.
You invented it.
So
it's called the Savannah Housing Project.
Yep. And so the question asks, what if a lot of the hardships in our individual lives for people trying to start up, get established, a lot of it is because of rent. Of just trying to make enough money to live while pursuing happiness. It's a conundrum. It's tough. Someone on minimum wage just can't make it. Okay.
Yeah.
They have to go with someone else. Landlords do stand to make a decent profit. There are complications with that. But I figured out a way that landlords can still make money. I mean, landlords being Savannah at this time as a developer. We will build these units for people in their different phases of life. So our first house is a 20 by 20 foot, two-story small unit. It has everything that everyone would need. A single person would need to live in it, maybe a single person with a significant other, no kids yet. We would pay the market value for the rent on that unit, and there would be three to a lot because it's smaller, so you have a small community. But that market value rent gets divided. So a portion goes to Savannah as the landlords, of course. But then a portion of those profits, because let's say after you take care of your maintenance fee and your taxes on a housing unit, right? The rest can be free and clear profit, you know, if you don't have people servicing these things. But if you do, then that's in the maintenance fee. So you've got this going on, and you've got a margin there for profit. Well, we're gonna sacrifice our profit. We're gonna lead by example. We're gonna cut that profit in half, and we're gonna give it back to the tenants. So the first way, I had a client who wanted us to design hydroponic units. We did. We designed hydroponic trailers and all kinds of hydroponic stuff. And then they didn't pay us. So we took the designs and we said, okay, we have this here. So the first thing would be pay for produce. So on every Monday, that individual in their unit could have enough produce to make it through to the next week. It's not that much money, actually. You know, I tried a vegan lifestyle. I'm not saying these people will be vegans, but I know that you can survive off of a vegan diet if it's balanced. So even if they want to use that with ground beef that they bought, that's one huge requirement for life that's taken care of. And that comes with your rent.
Trayvon, let me understand. So the food comes with the house?
It does.
Okay. Yes. Got it. Yep.
At the expense of surveillance profit.
So they're paying rent.
Yep.
And from that rent, they're getting housing and they're getting enough food to survive, right? Yep. They could buy more food if they want, but part of the deal is that they're being, you know, provided some food.
Yep.
And you're doing that through taking your portion of the rent and redistributing it so it becomes part of the business model. They get food as part of their rent.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Then to further extend that, there's one other thing that we can do, and that is what we call rent return. So if you go to school, if you're going to college, or if you're starting a nonprofit organization, or if you're starting a business, as long as you have those documents and are moving forward and showing progress, we return a percentage of your rent outright. So, mind you, we still maintain a small profit margin. It's not a lot. We're not in this for profit because that's not what Savannah was started for, but we do get some return from it. But the bulk of all these things are paid for by the rent itself. So when you get this rent return, it's supposed to be a three-year program because for this first housing unit, the small one, because that's the life cycle of people, right? You graduate college or you go to college, and you spend 3 or 4 years in there. As soon as you get out, you're ready to have kids. And when you're at that level, we'll have another unit that's bigger. And this becomes a way of life, right? This becomes a different way of life. And so you've got this rent return coming back to you. At me starting a business, if I could get $100 back from my rent, that would have bought cards, that would have bought my website, that would have bought my lunches, that would have bought flyers. It will go miles for an entrepreneur starting up.
Yeah.
So this becomes a way of life. This focusing on the person, the consumer, focusing on the person who's renting. Savannah will become a company that stands behind you. And later I'll talk about how this ties into being an architect and how you guys can follow suit and still be profitable. But in any event, as we incubate this family then returns by, you know, they pay their normal rent. They're not going to be in school forever. So the rent return goes away. You still make profit off the house. They have a better way of living. There are multiple facets to this plan. But the big thing is making that difference is if, as architects, the problem solvers for community, we are community. Then things start to look differently. So that's the crux of it, and that's the big end all for Savannah. Savannah will step back from even being just a contractor and become a developer outright. And because we're the contractor and designer now in Toledo, you don't have to be an architect to build houses. A house, for example, for the small unit would probably cost me $20,000 to $15,000. Okay. That's a fraction of if I hired a contractor to do it. And, you know, so that's how we're going to work it out. We can't have loans weighing down this program. It has to be self-sustaining. So it's very hard to do this unless you're the designer and contractor.
Week after week, episode after episode, you hear me talk about some great companies who provide outstanding products and services to help us small firm architects build better businesses. Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat have been dedicated supporters of the Entree Architect community and this podcast for years. Every episode, I ask you to check them out and thank them for supporting us. Because with their support, we've been able to grow this podcast. And in turn, we've been able to grow the Entree Architect platform, serving the global community of small firm architects like you. So today, I want to stop and thank you, the Entree Architect community, for supporting them, our loyal platform sponsors. And I want to ask you to make an extra effort this week to connect with each sponsor, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. Using the links that I'll share in a minute, you can find their contact forms and thank them. I mean, like, literally thank them. Because as the economy shifts and slows, marketing budgets are shrinking. Companies are going to need to choose where they spend their marketing dollars. And we want them to spend them here with us, supporting the Entree Architect community. So let me take a little bit of time here and share a little bit of information for each sponsor and the link for where you can connect. And then pause this episode right now and connect with each sponsor. Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. Small businesses across the country love running payroll with Gusto. Gusto automatically files and pays your taxes. It's super easy to use, and you can add benefits and management tools to help take care of your team and keep your business safe. It's loyal, it's modern, and let's face it, we all need some help with our payroll and taxes. Gusto is making it easy so we can focus on being architects. So give Gusto a try for free for 3 months. The link to give Gusto a try is entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's the link to connect and say thank you for supporting Entree Architect. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. FreshBooks wants you to know that you're not alone. FreshBooks has been supporting small businesses and solopreneurs, and specifically, they've been supporting us here at Entree Architect Podcast for years. They know what it's like, how lonely it may be working from home. They know what it's like when times get tough. And they know that right now, as we all face this crisis together as a global community, we all need to do our part. So FreshBooks is responding and offering an unprecedented offer. Now, when you join FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software, you'll receive 60% off for 6 months. 60% off for 6 months. Just visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, and enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Don't forget to do that. That's 60% off their regular price for 6 months. So visit entrearchitect.com/freshbooks, sign up for that 60% off, then go find their contact form and thank FreshBooks for being such a long-time loyal supporter of Entree Architect. That's entrearchitect.com/freshbooks. As you and your team are working from home, are the logistics of putting together a project daunting when no one is in the same room? Arcat has a solution for you, and it's free. Arcat's Charette allows you to manage projects and specification documents online with multiple team members. Discuss products, configurations, outline specs, project photos, documents, and so much more, all on one page, along with the ability to access product information, specifications, CAD, BIM, and the patented Spec Wizard from anywhere in the world. Charette can help your firm get more done, no matter where in the world you might be. You can even promote your firm's project when you're done. And like all of Arcat's solutions, it's completely free to use. So check it out right now at entrearchitect.com/arcat. That's entrearchitect.com/arcat, A-R-C-A-T, entrearchitect.com/arcat. And don't forget to thank Arcat for the years and years of their support for the Entree Architect community. So thank you, the Entree Architect community, for supporting them, our loyal platform sponsors, Gusto, FreshBooks, and Arcat. Let's talk about the funding of it. So you said that you don't want the loan because you don't want the debt, right?
Right.
And so what's your plan for funding it? How do you get that first one built?
So we are a full service contracting and design group. So we are taking regular projects just like normal. Whereas, say, for example, you as an architect, maybe you have a charity that you donate to, maybe give $1,000, $2,000 a year as a tax shelter or something like that. Not as a tax shelter, but you get the tax.
Yeah, donation. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of people do it. We'll just do that. So, yeah, we'll still have to pay the taxes.
So you're going to work as a contractor and a designer, build a strong business there that's profitable, take the profits from that business and invest in this idea. So just build a fund so that fund grows, and over time you have enough to execute on this project.
Right. So there's multiple facets to it. We talked about, for example, food and produce. We can set up our own hydroponics, you know, on one lot, you know, and the tenants take care of it, maybe for more rent return and things like that. That's possible. But to be honest, produce is cheap enough that with very minimal money, I can just buy it from the local market. I can get it from local farmers. It can be organic. We can change. The mission of Savant is to change what it means to live and be alive. And with that being said, don't you feel the difference in what your life could be if only your landlord felt like this? This is very much a philanthropic endeavor. I don't expect people who are very driven for high profits, I don't expect them to adopt this model. That's not what this is about. That's not what it's for. There's room for profit, as much or as little as you want to give. But the idea is to start something different. We're in a capitalist society. So the second there's an option like this on the market and it's big enough, other renting companies and landlords are going to have to follow suit more or less, or else people are just not going to rent from them. As we continue to grow, and we have on a lot, we have 3 units and lots are cheap in Toledo, and we have, you know, 4 or 5 units, 4 or 5 lots, and we can suck up all of the residents and things like that. Landlords are going to say, well, okay, you know, hey, we're just as good as them. We also offer produce. We're not going to offer you everything they're offering you, but we also give you produce. You know, so that's the impact that we're trying to have. And we just want to lead by example. I don't come from money. I don't have a lot of money. I've always been down in the dirt, fighting it out. And I get a rush from that. This is my lifestyle. I'll be fine. So if I don't make profit hand over fist, if I make enough to be comfortable, that's fine for me. But later, you know, the ripples from this, that's the real reward. And for those people who are like that, who are like me, this is me speaking to you. You know, just do it. I mean, you know, just do it. You can make that change and understand that we're in a capitalist market. If you offer something that makes someone's life better, they'll go for it. They'll line up. There'll be a waiting list. And then once you can reach capacity on that, other renters will follow suit to offer an equivalent product on the market.
Yeah. I mean, once you have a successful development and it's working, you will influence the market. Other markets will do similar things in order to compete with what you're doing. And so you will influence the whole market. Other people will start doing it as well. Are there models similar to what you're talking about with rent return and food and all of that? Are there any other models that you can look at that are doing similar things?
I don't know of any that don't mark up the rent as well, because it's very uncommon. Maybe there are some who are nonprofits. I'm not gonna say that there aren't any like this.
Yeah.
That would likely end up in me being a liar. What I am saying is, it's tough to find people who would volunteer to do these things and not mark up the rent as well.
Yeah.
Not treat it as an amenity, right? So it's an amenity. So hey, pay an extra $300 a month, and look, now you get free food and you get a gym. We're saying just as a condition of living, because I'm responsible for your living environment, you're entitled to these things. And I'm not marking it up. So whatever the market value is for this area, for example, so So this unit, I could in my area, I could probably rent it for $500 a month. Okay, that's not a huge amount of money, but from that $500 a month, we're talking about a maintenance of maybe setting aside $100 a month. We're in the areas that I'm looking at, the property taxes are $2,000 a year. So, you know, you break that down, that's what, somewhere around $150 a month or something like that. You know, so you've got $250 a month in maintenance fees, and maybe say $350 just for the heck of it, just to have a maintenance guy driving around or something like that handling these. And you've got three units to a lot. That's $1,500 total income, total expenses. $350 is like not $1,000. So you've got $500 free and clear profit that you can play with, that you can take from yourself or that you can give back. If you could buy these produce things in bulk and stuff like that, you could probably cut half of that income and still take $200 home. But this is why my business has three legs to it, because the renting is not the main profit source. There are other ways that we can proliferate profit from this situation. You know, we can, I have contacts with a furniture manufacturer, a food, a restaurant who's trying to, you know, start up his food truck first. So we've got other ways that you can generate profit from this community of people. But starting off, I mean, you can be solid and you can just do a good thing. You can have a small extra amount of income coming in. And I don't know if it's worthwhile to you personally. Like I said, this is very much a philanthropic endeavor. I don't imagine walking in a bank and telling them, hey, we're pretty much gonna give 50 to 75% of our profit back to our tenants. So can we have this loan? They look at me like I'm crazy. I'd also not go to an investor because they'll say, yeah, no.
Yeah, different priorities, right? Yeah, right. So, but you could set up the development company as a separate nonprofit company and keep the architecture and contracting as a for-profit company that then donates to the nonprofit. So you can build the architecture and the contracting business into a thriving business, and then you can take all the profits from that company and donate it to the nonprofit that helps fund the nonprofit. Then tax wise, you end up in a much better place. Then you also may be able to get some loans if you wanted them, and you may be able to get grants through the nonprofit in order to help fund it as well. And grants, they give you the money, and as long as you do what they give you the money for, that comes, you know, free and clear. And right. So there are a bunch of different ways that idea can be funded. I love that idea. I'm a jury member on the annual Charette Venture Group business plan competition. And very often, every year, we get architects who submit business plans for nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And my question always is, how do you fund that nonprofit? And often it is, you know, I'm going to do fundraising. I'm going to go out and ask for money, and I'm going to do that. And that's a full-time job. You can ask anybody who runs a nonprofit that's a full-time job. And so very often my recommendation, and I've never done this, but this is my thought on it, is build a strong, successful business that's profitable. Mm-hmm. Then the profit is yours to do whatever you want with it. You can go and spend it on new cars or new houses. You can spend it on the business and keep the business, you know, growing. Or you can take that profit and donate it, right? Give it away. Do whatever you want with it. And so if you build a really strong business on the contracting and design side, you would be able to, which is exactly what you're saying you're doing. You're going to fund the other side. But if you keep them separate, then you have more flexibility on how you do that financially. So right. definitely a doable idea. I love the idea. What I love most about it is that you are taking control of the things you have control over, right? You're focusing on those things that you have control over. You have this skill. You have this design and contracting skill. You have a neighborhood that needs your assistance, needs your help. Right, there are people out there that need your help, who are being taken advantage of the system the way it is, and you can provide an alternative to that that not only helps those people, but then becomes a model for other developers who want to do similar things.
And I share this openly for that reason, you know? It's not like I'm trying to own the idea. I mean, there's some creative people out there. I share this openly because, you know, I do a lot of things because of my kids. You know, I wonder, like, you know, how hard is it? How happy will they be? You know, what does happiness look like? How happy will they be? I personally was subject to renting, right? So I rented an apartment, and the second one thing went wrong, the whole thing unraveled because my income wasn't, you know, $25, $30 an hour. I did have the benefit of a college education, so I have above average income. But a lot of people that I know personally are like struggling to find $12 and $13 an hour jobs. So I wonder, about the stability of their lifestyle. You know, my car broke down. I've become so versatile for that reason. I can fix my own car, but you know, a lot of people can't. A lot of people can't fix their own car. They break a leg, they lose a job. You have 3 weeks. If everything goes wrong on the first one, you have 3 weeks to fix your life. And that is crazy. That is crazy. So is that the kind of world I want my kids to have to choose from? And I don't want it for your kids. If you have kids, I don't want it for anybody's kids. I don't want it for anybody. This is not, you know, we are blessed as a country to have a relatively comfortable lifestyle. But there's always room for growth, and we can keep pushing that narrative. We can keep pushing how coming together and making it better for the person next to you, you know, because at the end of the day, it's the golden rule, you know, treat people how you want to be treated. I wish there was a program like that, that I could have joined in. I'd have been so happy. The happiest I've ever been, though, is actually, believe it or not, not having any static residence. So not having to worry about rent, I gave up my car note and I got, for the business though, I gave up my car note and I got a car, paid it outright, so I didn't have to worry about that, you know? So I don't have a car note and I didn't have rent. And only thing I had to worry about was maintaining my personal connections with friends and family, eating and progressing through forward to my goal in life. And I wish more people had that experience. I wish rent wasn't such an oppressive situation. And so Savan, we picked that. We targeted that monster, and we're gonna take it down a peg or two.
Yeah. I'm inspired by you, Trayvon. I believe that many of the problems we have in our world are because people don't treat other people with respect and care. We don't love one another, right? And we don't see one another as neighbors, as one-on-one, right? And the only way all of the problems are going to be fixed in our world is that we do start caring for one another. And what you're doing is exactly that. You're looking, you're seeing that there's a problem in your neighborhood, and you've taken the skills and your talents and your knowledge, and you've come up with a solution to fix that. And that's what we all need to do. If we all do that, right? If we all look around and say, where are the problems? How do we solve those problems? And we, as a community of architects, that is our mission, right? Fix the problems. Go out and find the problems. One of my long-term goals with Entre Architect and Gable Media and Gable Technologies is to be able to network the brain power, the knowledge that we all have as architects in our community. If we can build this community into tens and hundreds of thousands of people who have that creative ability that you have, imagine what we can do when we harness all of that on these problems that we have in our society, right? And so if we all look around and find the problems that we have, come up with creative solutions like that. Don't worry about how it's going to get paid for, right? Just like you said, just go do it. Just find the problem and then go attack the problem, fix the problem. And yes, it'll be difficult. And yes, there'll be barriers. And yes, you'll fail here and there. But every time you fail, you learn what not to do, right? And then you can do it a different way. And you just keep going at it until it works. If we all did that, the whole world would be better, for sure. It may not solve all the problems, but we'd be in a much better place today.
Oh, yeah.
I think the society would shift if we started caring for one another, right? We didn't just walk past the people who needed our help. We stopped and said, "Are you okay?" Right? Yeah. I truly believe that's, you know, there's a lot of problems that we need to fix. But I really think it starts with ourselves, looking at ourselves and saying, well, how do we fix what we can fix in front of us?
Right.
And then just keep going, right? Just keep moving forward and making the next thing better. Very inspiring, Trayvon, very inspiring. Anybody who's listening who has knowledge in what Trayvon's doing, reach out to him. Reach out to me. I'll get you in touch with him. Reach out to him. He's just Savant. Savayan. Mm-hmm. I said it right the entire time. Savayan.com. It's Savayan.com. Connect with Trayvon and say, here's some experience I have. This is, you know, these are some of the things that I've done. You might be able to apply with what you're doing over there. And Trayvon, if there's anything else that I can do to help to get the word out, let me know. Before we wrap things up, I wanted to ask you the one question that I ask everybody here. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
That's a good question. I think the small firm architect, I think the first thing is outreach and marketing. I have one of my closest mentors has recently branched off from being an employed architect to his own architecture firm. He's great. He's always, when I say he's always stood right behind me, he's always stood right behind me. But he spends so much time working for himself that he doesn't deal with the marketing and the technological side. I read a book called The E-Myth, and this is kind of like, you've read it. Good.
One of my favorites. Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. And actually 2 years ago, I shut Savayan down. I shut it down. Like, all clients, back off. I need to work on this. And I built my business back up from scratch. And to be clear, a lot of these small firm architects are doing light years more money than I am. So I understand I'm standing on words of a more seasoned person myself, but this immediately has helped me come back and start landing projects left and right in both spheres, design and construction. Read the book E-Myth. Get on top of your system and your marketing. If you're having trouble, as most of these firms have one or two people, and I already know you guys, you're sitting there with your Excel spreadsheet and you're tracking your intern's time and you're managing projects from this Excel spreadsheet dashboard that you have. I have one too. I'll throw a company out that can really get you together. It's Golem Analytics. They're making a dashboard for me. And
what is it called?
It's called Golem, G-O-L-E-M.
Okay, G-O-L-E-M, Analytics.
And they streamline all that. They give you the whole package. I think that's where most small architecture firms need to start, because managing your people, if you don't have something in place for that, that's another full-time job that you have to deal with. It's either Excel spreadsheet or you're going to have a dashboard. Reach out to them. Let them talk to you. If you reach out to me and need to know more about them, I'll forward you on. I think that's the best thing you can do. If you want better business, take away all the fat from your business, you know? Take away the long nights and get your marketing together. Get it out there. Come up with a set schedule, maybe 3 ads or something like that. Reach out. Get into your community. In another podcast, I told her, you guys are still the rock stars, okay?
I heard you say that.
Yeah. Architects still have weight to throw around. They're just undervalued because we let ourselves be undervalued. we don't make ourselves present in the community enough. What we do are STEM, you know, we do STEM events, you know, stuff like that. But we're not digging deep enough into the community. And you'll find projects will come if you're just there. If you're there at local events, if you're there at your council meetings, speaking on issues that matter to you and stuff like that, lead. I'm an architect and I'm leading this community. This is my community. I'm going to help build it, take control of that. In the past, we have been. We were the builders. We were the everything. But we've allowed our, well, not we, I'm not an architect yet, but we've, I'm going to say we for the sake of the conversation.
We are a community, Trayvon.
Right, right. We've allowed ourselves to be pigeonholed. And that's where you got to stop. If you're a small architecture firm, get out there and be that small architecture firm tackling those small issues. But you can't do that if you're behind your desk fiddling with an Excel spreadsheet for 3 hours every night, you know, when you could be finishing a project or spending that time in outreach. That's your biggest thing. I personally saw it from the architect I mentioned earlier. All of his clients have come from just being out there. So,
yeah, I see the influence of the E-Myth Revisited all over you, Trayvon. I see it in the shirt you're wearing. I see it in the logo. I see it in the website. I see it in the way you're talking. It is an excellent book that I have recommended many times in the past. I think not only every architect, but every small business owner should read that book, the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. Trayvon, you are going to be very successful. You are going to, and I know your priorities have shifted since you saw those glass houses. and your priorities are different, but I think that you may not want those houses anymore, but I think you will someday be able to buy many of them. Your heart is in the right place and you are moving in the right direction. And I believe you are the model that we should be pursuing, that you look around and you build a strong, successful business through marketing and through sales, through understanding financial management, and then apply what you have. That's why I talk about profit then art. That's exactly what you're doing, Trayvon, is you need to build a profitable business that then, if your art is creating a development that provides food for people and gives money back, then that's your art, right? And so the way that art is funded, the way that art becomes a reality is to build a really strong business on the other side that can help support that. Then you have all the control, right? You have no debt. You have nobody that says that you can't do it, right? Just go do it because now you have the money, your own money to do it. And that's exactly what you're planning on doing. And so very inspiring. I appreciate you for coming here and sharing your story. And if anybody has any knowledge or input that you'd like to share with Trayvon as you are listening here, it's Savayan. It's SAVAYN.com. We'll have a link to his website on the show notes. Trayvon, I appreciate you. I appreciate you for coming here and sharing your knowledge and inspiring us. And thanks for sharing your knowledge here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
That's always a great time, Mark.
You are listening to episode 329 of Entree Architect Podcast. If you would like to access the show notes with all the links of everything that Trayvon and I talked about today, you can visit entrearchitect.com/episode329. And while you're at it, go share that link with a friend. Just one friend. entrearchitect.com/episode329. If you have a friend who you think might want to hear this episode, and I think you do, entrearchitect.com/episode329. Go send that link to your friend right now. If you like this podcast, I ask you to go visit our new home, Gable Media, at gablemedia.com. Subscribe to this podcast, Entree Architect Podcast, and all of our other Gable Media shows, including Build Your Brand Podcast, ArcaSpeak Podcast, Spaces Podcast, Practice Disrupted with Evelyn Lee and Janine Chastain, and our newest show, Troxel, Evan Troxel's new show about technology and the future of architecture. They're all there, all your favorite podcasts in one place at Gable Media. Listen and subscribe today at gablemedia.com. That's GABL media.com. love, learn, and share what you know. Thank you for listening today. Have a great week.